Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
This is John Lyons on WEEI.
Gerard had mentioned earlier this week that just between joint practice and this game, it could be good for building your confidence. I'm just wondering where your confidence is now after tonight.
Yeah, I think every time you get out there, I think you kind of get more and more confident. First off, it's always going to be the nerves, going out there, running out there the first time. But other than that, yeah, I think, the more reps, I think it's only going to help me. And at the end of the day, I'm just, fortunate to be able to get out there and get some reps and try to make the most of my opportunities.
That's Drake May talking about making the most of his opportunities. We're back here on WEEI. I'm John Lyons alongside Chris Scheim. And it feels like Scheim, up until Thursday night, didn't get a ton of higher-end opportunities. Now, he had a lot of opportunities, a lot of reps in the joint practice with the Eagles. He had a lot of reps throughout training camp. But Thursday, first time we saw him with what was most of the top unit offensive line.
Yeah, and he needs more of it. Like, I feel like it's without a doubt at this point. There's talent there. There's potential there. It is not an epic disaster of any kind. It's not Josh Rosen. Like, this kid can play. Now give him opportunities with Pop Douglas and with David Andrews. Because I said this on the Greg Hill Show on Friday. Like, to me, he should be tied at the hip to David Andrews. There is no one more important to the success of Drake May right now than David Andrews, because he is going to be able to help him understand what he's seeing at the line of scrimmage. He is the one that's going to be able to help him understand how to be setting protections and how to make sure that he's not getting himself killed. And like all of those things, David Andrews might be the most important person to Drake May's early success.
Yeah, David Andrews is definitely going to play a massive role. We saw how things looked without David.
Yeah, not great. Fumbled snap.
Yeah.
Protection wasn't ideal. Yeah. Like that.
Even the
those
late
are going to be
snap
issues.
Below Zappi's legs to end the game.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, we saw what it was without
David. Nick Leverett is your backup center. He's been playing center for all of like 2 months now.
I was going to say 2 months.
He's been a guard his whole career.
Yeah. And I think you're probably at your best when he plays guard.
Yes,
yeah.
I would agree. That's why when you were asking Hart those questions earlier, too, your four courtroom questions, I feel like they would be better suited if they kicked Okorafor to left tackle, put Onwenu at right tackle, and just started Leverett at guard.
Yeah, or I think the guy to watch, because, we love getting an offensive
Wallace.
Line talk here.
Oh, love offensive line.
Layden Robinson, too, at right guard. Like, I think they'd be better served. Because I know, let's say you have Layden Robinson at right guard, you're going to have Onwenu at right tackle, Andrews at center, Sidiso at left guard, and then So your Caden Wallace, I'd be fine with it. Again, I know it's a rookie left tackle who played 2,200 snaps at Penn State, all of them at right tackle. But if that's one position you got a game plan for and learn, that because right now, frankly, Sean, they kind of have to game plan to help out both tackles.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem.
Well, and the thing that bugs me, too, is you saw them try to do it in that game on Thursday night. Vidarian Lowe had help on the outside and yet insisted.
That sack on the inside was brutal.
Insisted on sliding so far outside. Like, he had the chip assist on the outside. He just keeps an inside stance on that guy, and Drake May doesn't get blown up from behind. And so I also don't see the upside, I guess, with Vidarian Lowe. Like, you know, Greg and Curtis, I feel like at times have kind of driven this point across that they feel like the New England isn't necessarily a desirable location. So you're going to have to resort to building through the draft.
Sure.
And my thought is, if that is in fact the case, why is a guy like Caden Wallace not just starting at left tackle then? Why is he not getting as many reps as possible at left tackle? That's the highest tackle you drafted. He's the youngest, most prime for development. He should be getting way more reps than Vidarian Lowe, who you picked up off of waivers last year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the state of this offensive line, because I think this goes to the heart of the issue of Brissett or May, because I fully believe, and again, as I said with you and Hart, I want to wait on starting May till at least week six or so,
yep,
maybe five. But a huge part of it is the state of this offensive line. I mean, if they had the Eagles' offensive line, I'd be much more open to playing this
game. Yeah, or San Francisco,
or
one of those Detroit,
any of those
Green
top,
Bay, you know, yeah, all those guys.
Perfect example, because, yeah. I mean, if you look at this, if David Andrews gets hurt, you're in trouble, like big trouble.
Yeah.
If Mike Onwenu, and we're talking one injury, Mike Onwenu, you're in big trouble. Even look at, like, if you look at beyond Onwenu and Andrews, and I guess I'll put City So in there, not a lot of guys you have confidence in. Like, even 2 years ago, you used a first-round pick on Cole Strange. Once he comes back from injury, is he going to play? I'm not confident he's going to play.
I think that exists across the roster. It's not even just the offensive line. It's like your quarterbacks get hurt. Like, Christian Gonzalez gets hurt outside of John Jones. Like, are you confident in anybody else playing on the outside? Not really.
There's guys to like there, but you don't feel the same way.
No, you look at receiver. If Pop Douglas gets hurt, are you excited? I mean, like, yeah, it'll be great that Javon Baker and Jalen Polk will get more reps, but is there anybody that's really going to step into that role and be great?
By the way, Polk should be starting. I don't know why Tyquan Thornton, and maybe it's just a veteran thing, second preseason game.
Well,
but
I think they need to see. I think they're forcing the issue and trying to see what they have with him. He was a second-round draft pick. You have to determine now, is he worth making the roster, or should you cut him? Because, like, it should be week one when you go out against the Bengals, in my opinion, it should be Drake May at quarterback, Ramondre Stevenson at running back, and then in a three-receiver set, it should be Bourne, Pop, and Polk across the board with Hunter Henry on the field.
Yeah,
like, that's how it should be.
I agree completely with the receiver group. Like, because I think Bourne is your best receiver. I know he's been hurt, but he's your best. 800 yards a couple years ago, or 3 years ago, and last year was on pace to surpass that before he got hurt. He's your best receiver. I think Pop Douglas is a different role, but he's your second best receiver in that slot.
Yeah, he's going to play in the slot, and then Jalen Polk should be your second outside receiver.
He's your third best receiver now.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And I think by the end of the year, he might be your second best, maybe your best.
I said this to Fitzy months ago. Like, I think Jalen Polk will be the most exciting player from the draft class right away.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Drake May's going to take a little bit of time. But, yeah, I think the kid is really talented, and he's just a hoover. Like, he is going to suck up any ball that comes his way. I think it's important to not kind of overstress what he needs to do. Like, almost keep it similar to what the Seahawks did with DK Metcalf in his rookie season. It's like, give him like four routes and just have him almost kind of master those routes. Like, don't expect him to crush the route tree right away. Like, he is a possession guy. I don't need him running fly routes all the time. Like, I want him that 5 to 20 yard range is where he should just freaking thrive.
Yeah, and he was great yards after the catch in Washington. That was a huge part of his game, is he would catch those 5 to 15 yarders and he would take off.
And he has reliable hands, so that's why, like, in traffic, he's going to be really good.
He's going to get you first downs.
Yeah, yes,
I would agree. And it's something, like, you look at this offense and what, like, and this is where Alex Van Pelt comes in, because I think one of the reasons he was hired is because some of the other guys they asked said no. Mm-hmm. But another reason he was hired is to help develop this quarterback position. But you also have a rookie in Jalen Polk, who could end up being your best receiver. You have a rookie in Javon Baker, who has some real potential. We'll see, I don't know if he'll get to that, but he's got some potential. You have another rookie in Caden Wallace, who long-term is probably going to be a tackle for you. Another rookie in Laydon Robinson, who's going to be a starting offensive. Can Van Pelt develop these guys? And that, because everyone talks about his development.
Because there's no Dante Scarnecchia anymore who can just put, no. he can MacGyver
there's
something
no Chad
together
O'Shea,
with, yeah, with rubber
receiver.
Bands and scotch
there's
tape.
No Ivan Fears, there's no, like, there's all these, and that was one of the unheralded things about their dynasty. They had elite position coaches all over the place. Do they have that?
Scar is like the most underrated coach I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, you can make a case he's a top five most important person in their whole dynasty.
100% I mean, agree.
You can make the case, but they don't have that anymore.
No, they do
this
not.
This is where Van Pelt comes in, because I've even noticed, and this is kind of probably a nitpick thing for me as a former coach, there's been at least three times where they've motioned Jalen Polk into the formation to kind of set up as like a wing-type player and block either a defensive end or an overhang linebacker, and he's gotten smoked all three times. And it's one of those things. In practice, he got rolled up on. I thought he got hurt. Thankfully, he wasn't. Like, that's going to lead to him getting hurt. They're not going to have productive run plays doing it. Like, little, but like.
So the issue, too, though, becomes.
Realize, hey, this is what Polk's strengths are. Let's tailor things to this.
Well, I think one of the reasons, I think to that point, I think one of the reasons they brought in Van Pelt is because originally the Stefanski offense thrives with that two tight end set, right? Where they have big bodies on the field, they're going to run the football. That's why Nick Chubb had so much success early on in the Stefanski offense, is because it is just built for that running game to have a lot of success. And so I think that's how they're going to avoid Polk having to fall into those blocking scenarios and getting hurt in those instances, is they're going to have Hooper and Hunter Henry on the field a lot. Like, I think it is going to be predicated on running the football, play action. And that's why I think it's so important that Drake May gets as many under center snaps with David Andrews as possible.
And what's interesting about that, and this will be an adjustment for Van Pelt, because last year the Browns offense was top five in the league in 11 personnel usage.
Well, so they one transitioned, yeah, because
right.
That's what Deshaun Watson wanted. Then Deshaun Watson gets hurt, and it's like, well,
yeah,
this
you
is...
go through quarterback, is, yeah. So, but will he now, hey, this is what I have in New England, I'm going to go 12 personnel. Like, I'm going to run the, because, by the way, Stevenson has looked great.
Yeah.
In camp, in the preseason, like, they need to keep getting him. Antonio Gibson has looked great.
Yeah, I think it's good that their running backs have looked good, because you're going to need that. You're going to need a lot of it. And Antonio Gibson is just, he's just a lesser version of Ramondre. He does everything Ramondre does, but probably just slightly worse. But that's, it's great, because it's not like that classic James White, Sony Michel scenario where a guy, oh, James White's on the field, they're going to throw the football.
Yeah.
Oh, Sony Michel's on the field, they're going to run it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, there was Sony Michel's last year, was like they ran the ball like 75 or 80% of the snaps he was out there.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It was, I don't remember the example, but it was something nuts. Like, and that's the thing with this offense, because the headline, and what we've talked a lot about, we're going to continue, is Drake May and his development. That's the key to the franchise. Like, we get it. But you have a rookie head coach. You have an offensive coordinator who's calling plays for a full season for, what, the second time?
Ever.
Like, ever?
The first time in 15 years.
Exactly. So you have, and you have newer position coaches, guys. So how are they developing not just May, but what's Polk's development? What's Baker's? Because even Baker, like, we were joking earlier with him, like, dude's getting shoved out of bounds on some of these deep routes. Like, is that going to get
He's got to be stronger off the line.
And part of that is, again, just the weight room.
Yeah.
But there are things that they're going to be able to correct formationally, so that doesn't happen. Technique-wise with him, so that does. Like, is that going to get corrected between now and 10 days from now when they play Washington?
I would be really curious to see if Alex Van Pelt is creative enough to be like a Mike McDaniel type in that, like, okay, my guy can't win at the line of scrimmage. I'll just put him in motion so he has a head start. You can't jam him at the line of scrimmage. Because, I mean, that was one of the things that McDaniel made unbelievably popular, that like half motion with Tyreek Hill. And it's just, it was more so because Hill was so fast, but it also just prevents you from getting jammed at the line of scrimmage. I got my guy in motion, he's already got a head start. It's that XFL mentality where you have a guy sprinting already up to the line of scrimmage. I'm gonna have this guy in motion, get him a head start, and boom, up the field we go. Will Alex Van Pelt employ or deploy a lot of motion? Because I think that would be a huge, huge assist to this offense.
I would agree, and I think formationally, motion-wise, all that, they're going to, just with the talent they have, they're going to have to do a lot of that stuff. We're going to pick up this discussion right after the break, but first, time to trend with Joe Braverman.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Rod, what did you see from your offensive line tonight?
There were definitely some ups and some downs. I would say there's a dramatic drop-off, not really physically, but just knowing what to do between the first line and the second and third guys. They have to get better as a whole, as a unit. They just have to get better, and that comes through playing football games. So we have another preseason game coming up. We're going to play, and that's the only way you're going to get better at football is playing football.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyons alongside Chris Schein. And we've been talking quite a bit about Drake May and his development in the offense. We are going to get to the Matthew Judon trade, which we haven't spent so much going on today, Schein. We haven't even gotten to
it. He got traded? Oh, my God.
Yeah, right. Yes, of course. Yes. He is not here anymore.
Nope. Did you not notice any red sleeves not on the field during Thursday?
I will say, though, a lot of Judon jerseys in the crowd on Thursday.
Well, yeah, he was the most popular player probably prior
and
to
best.
Yeah, probably
post Brady player. I guess I don't. Yeah, but let's just for a few more minutes get into this Drake May thing, because I feel like my reservations about playing Drake May early. Part of it is Drake May's development, right? How can he set protections out of empty formation, under center snaps, processing through multiple reads, which are more complex than what he had at UNC. That's part of it. But honestly, for me, a bigger part of it is you have questions at both tackle positions. You have a question at offensive coordinator. You even look, and we were just hyping up Jalen Polk, and I think he's legit, but he is a rookie. Bourne's coming
definitely
off an injury. Like, you have some questions at your receiver position. To me, Schein, it has even more to do with what's around Drake May than even May himself, why I'm kind of reserved about playing him right away.
Sure, but that... There's a couple of things with that. To me, it's almost like I feel like I'm playing scared a little bit, which to me is just not in my nature. It's just not how I've ever done things. You know, I'm a big Johnny Tsunami guy, like go big or go home.
They call him Sling It Schein.
Yeah.
Never scared.
You kidding me? But it's more so, too. It's just like, okay, so what if I'm wrong? As someone who has, you know, evaluated the draft class, I love Drake May. I have always loved Drake May, even prior to being drafted by New England. What if I'm just dead wrong and he stinks? Shouldn't you try and figure that out sooner rather than later? Like, if it is in fact a Josh Rosen scenario, you should try and find out right away, because again, One of the most important times in an NFL franchise is when you have a good rookie quarterback on that rookie contract. Though that four-year, five-year window is essential to success. And so if I can figure out right away in season one if Drake May has potential or doesn't, I feel like as a franchise, I am obligated to do that for the future success of my franchise.
And I think you can make the case it's really a three-year window, because what do you have to decide after the third year about the fifth-year option?
Yep.
So, and again, if you sat, and I'm not saying to do this, but if they sat May for a full year, you could just do 3 years of year two, three, four, you know, figure it out. You could, but like, I think May should play at some point this year. I do believe, unless, and I'd be shocked, but if they're a playoff team, okay, with Prisett, fine. But otherwise,
yeah, they're not a playoff team.
Exactly. But I'm saying that's the one caveat. Otherwise, May should play this year. But what I want to see is, can they get into week five and six, stabilize the offensive line? Because at that point, too, like I mentioned, Laydon Robinson, Caden Wallace, can those guys start to develop over the first month of the season? Can Jalen Polk carve out a role for himself? Can Alex Van Pelt become comfortable just as a play caller again for the first time in 15 years by Columbus Day, right? By mid-October? Because I understand your argument about, hey, you don't want to play scared, but I think to put May in that situation week one would be a little reckless to me.
But I also think it's detrimental to Alex Van Pelt. You talk about him finding his groove as a play caller. What you're going to call in a game for Jacoby Brissett is going to be vastly different than what you're going to call in a game for Drake May.
I don't know if it's going to be vastly different.
Their skill sets are so different.
I think it'll be different. Like, obviously, you have the much more mobile element with May, but a lot of your passing game stuff or your bootleg play action, you're gonna call that with
you're gonna call way more read option and stuff with Drake May than you are with Jacoby Brissett.
I don't know. Maybe, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I think they'll do some of it. I think you're right. I just don't know if they're going to do a high volume of read option stuff with Drake.
See,
he'll do some. Don't get me wrong. But
like,
I think you could pull
so many elements from a team like Miami with just the speed at which Tua makes decisions. You can kind of utilize that, take that to your advantage with Drake May, because he also has the ability to just hold on to the football and run. Like, that read option no longer becomes just a handoff or quick pass. It now becomes a quick pass, handoff, or QB keep. And so his just fleet of foot ability makes things so much more multidimensional on offense that Alex Van Pelt has to go through so many more steps in his head on how he wants to call the game, I think, compared to what Jacoby Brissett.
I think the other side of that coin is, though, there's going to be concepts and things that Jacoby Brissett's able to know and do at a, just not maybe not a higher level long term, but earlier, that they won't be able to call for Drake.
Is there, though? Like, I don't think there is.
And I'm not saying it's a ton, but I think it's...
But, like, if it's going to be a seven-step drop where he has to go through multiple reads, okay, is Drake May going to do it at the speed Jacoby Brissett is right out of the gate? Maybe not.
Probably not.
But at the same time...
So long.
Again, he has the escape room or escape rope of being able to just run out of the pocket. Like, it's like if he only gets through two reads and he's sensing pressure, it's like, okay, I can just escape and get a positive play.
Yeah, and I think, like, when we talk about May's development, those little things that, and we talked about this in the very first segment, like, it got to a point where people were nitpicking him and it was like, oh, you know, he does this little dip with his shoulder so he can't play for 3 months. Like, that's not the case. I think we've seen improvement, which is encouraging to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I will say,
Those first couple practices, people were very unhappy.
Not so hot.
Yeah. Not so great.
But, I know it's not the exact same thing, but I never felt like over the 3 years, like, Mac Jones got better at anything.
No.
Like, he came in and he was at a place where
he was good.
You could win some games and he was pretty good. And then,
But there was never improvement.
And even at an individual skill level, like, I never felt like, oh, he's better at throwing an out route now than he used to be, or he's better at a slant. He just was kind of that same guy, and then he got worse, and then he never got better at any.
I don't even know. A lot of it for Mac Jones, I don't even know if it was he got worse. I think things around, like, the teams around him that he was facing just got better.
Yeah, and I think by the third year, he was a worse player.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think so.
But I think that was more mentally than anything. Yeah. Physically, he was the same guy all 3 years, but mentally, he had absolutely deteriorated. Yeah.
Like, in his very first game against Miami, that over-the-shoulder throw he threw to James White, which was great, he never really built on that and was better and better. You know what I mean? Like, it was like,
and then
okay,
instead,
that's
he's making dumb throws in Indianapolis and quite possibly the worst interception either of us have ever seen.
Yeah, that was not, talk about not great.
Yeah, talk about not great.
Whereas May, I think we're seeing signs of, okay, His pocket awareness looks a little bit better than 2 months ago.
Yep.
Right? His recognition
of things looks better.
It looks better than 2 months ago. And I think, can he keep building on that, right? Are his under center snaps against Washington going to look better than they did against Philly, right? Just is he going to build on those, like that overthrow to boot? And look, every quarterback overthrows things. But is a little play like that going to look a little bit better?
Well, and I also think for him, a lot of that, like that throw in particular, was could probably be chalked up to like just like early game jitters.
Yeah.
Like it's just, I think this kid, and you can kind of see it in Thursday's game, especially early in his reps, where it was like, oh, like he's still a little, there's some jitters there. There's some the timidity to it. But when he makes a decision, when he has been decisive, like that ball to Baker down the down the seam, like, oh, this kid can sling. Like he is, you can see him trying to, especially early in that game, he was trying to guide the ball instead of just ripping it. Like when you watch some of the tape at UNC, he just gets the ball and he will just rip it. And a lot of times that's just what a quarterback needs to do. Forget about guiding the ball. Just throw the football. You'll be fine. You're talented enough. You've done this enough in your life. You understand how to do it. Just let it rip, brother.
And I think that's where the balance comes in, because you want him to let it rip, but he also has to play within the structure of the offense.
Sure.
And at UNC, and part of this is you're playing in the ACC, they built a structure for him that it's like, all right, 1-2, like rip it. Like, yeah. 1-2-3, rip it. Whereas here, I think, and again, I think that's something for an encouraging sign. I feel like he's better at that now than he was 3 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Or 2 months ago. And again, he's going to continue to build off that. So for me to play him, I want him to, A, continue to get better at that, but I mean, just, again, I keep going back to this, but, like, being out there and watching that joint practice, I'm like, they can't put this guy in front of this group. Like, they just can't. Because even, and I get the whole scared thing, but, and I don't mean to sound callous when I say this, but picture week four, Nick Bosa smokes Vidari Lowe off the edge and smokes your quarterback. You kind of rather that be Brissett than Drake May for
sure.
The long-term development. And that's my issue is, like,
but, like, he's going to get hit.
No, of course he is. But I could see his development getting hindered if this offensive line against his top group, which they'll face early in the year, is as bad as it was against Philly in that joint practice. He's not going to be able to go through reads. They're not even going to be able to call certain things. I think it could, and I'm not saying it's going to go to the level of David Carr, but I think it could slow down or hinder his development.
So I disagree, because like I think no matter who the quarterback is, whether it's Drake May or C.J. Stroud or Jordan Love or Patrick Mahomes, you're going to change the way you call something when you go against elite pass rushers like Nick Bosa or Myles Garrett, because of how good they are,
sure.
Right? Like if Tom Brady was the quarterback here, they are going to send help to the left side. They're going
to
find Nick Bosa.
They used to go five wide and they get the ball out in a second and a half. Remember,
exactly.
They do that all the time.
Or every single time Ramondre leaks out of the backfield, he is chipping Nick Bosa.
Sure.
Every single time. I mean, they did it against the Rams. That's one of the things they did so well. The running back comes out and they're just leveling the defensive lineman, and kind of that's, you're going to have to design your offense. And I think, again, I think it's fair to question Van Pelt more than it is even like the Drake May, just because of, we need to see that he can prove that he can game plan things away from elite talent, right? Bill Belichick always has said, like, I'm going to find their best player. I'm going to take him out of the game. I'm just not going to worry about him. I'm going to send everything I can at him to make sure he's not a factor. So will Alex Van Pelt see Nick Bosa and be like, all right, we're going to play. We are going to live in two tight end sets. We are going to chip him all game, whether it's a tight end or a running back, I don't care. We're going to send two guys at him every single time, and he's not going to be an issue. Or is he going to leave Vidarian Lowe or Chucks Okorafor on an island and get our guy murdered? And I think that's the big issue.
And I think, to your point, that's, I think, the bigger concern is, you can say, oh, chip Nick Bosa, help Vidarian Lowe, but you have a question at the other tackle, too. It's not
sure.
Just one tackle. Like, if it was one offensive lineman, you can scheme around that and you can be okay.
Yeah, but like at least Chucks Okorafor has been like a legit offensive tackle in football. Like he's played multiple seasons and started a lot of games.
Sure. But if he was that good, would an organization like the Steelers, who I think are pretty well run, just let him walk? Like that's kind of my concern.
Not
concern.
Necessarily,
like,
but
that's my concern. Like,
sure,
they're,
but
they're well run and they're just like, nah, we're good, dude. Like you can.
I get that, and that's fair, but at the same time, like, compared to Vidarian Lowe, like Chucks Okorafor is better than Vidarian Lowe, and I don't think it's particularly
close. It's a low bar.
Yeah, right. But again, that's why, like, I'm just so, confused, I guess, by the composition of the O-line, like why they're not.
Well, this is
you just paid. Wow, I can't. On Wenu, thank you. You just paid on Wenu all this money. Why not just stick him at tackle? He's already shown he can play tackle. Just put him at tackle.
Yeah.
And, well, do you think the reason for that is because Cole Strange isn't in there, so they need some kind of insurance?
Tackle is and guard? I think
infinitely
you would agree
more important
than guard. And you can make a guard work. I can find a guy who has played offensive line, stick him at guard, and figure it out. I can't do that at offensive tackle.
And I think this is something. And sorry to cut you off before, but this is something that it's really been a multi-year feeling. I mean, when was the last time, Shine, that they had great tackle play from both offensive tackles in your mind?
When was the last time?
To me, it was 2018 when they won the Super Bowl. That was the last time. Remember, that was when Trent Brown was good in 2018?
Yeah, yeah, that like, Rams run. He was pretty good, though, with Cam Newton a bit, too, though. I think they had pretty good tackle play with the Cam Newton year.
Okay, yeah, and that's also when they
had 2020.
Tooney. Okay, right.
So even still, 4 years ago.
So 2021, remember you had Isaiah Wynn at left tackle.
Yeah,
2022, right tackle was a turnstile. Remember, it took Connor McDermott in December to just play below average and stabilize things. Last year, the tackle position was a huge problem for most of the year. They had to move on Wenu out. So this has been something, whether it was Belichick, Groh, Wolf, Mayo, whoever's been in that, this has been a multi-year failure. And then even this offseason, like you have Jonah Williams out there who signs with the Cardinals, who 2 years ago was a good left tackle for the Bengals, and you don't go after that
guy?
Well,
I think it's because, and again, not to bring his name up again, but it also coincides with when Dante Scarnecchia left the team.
That's a huge part of it, too.
And I think I don't think Belichick accounted for just how big of an impact his departure would be. I mean, 2020 is when the offensive line started to go downhill. Dante's last year was 2019. Like, there were still remnants of what he had done in 2020, which is why it was probably pretty serviceable to good. And then things have since just continued
and
to go downhill.
And also, even like 2020, I mentioned you had Joe Tooney, who you franchise tag let there, but then let him walk. Like,
letting him walk was a mistake.
And if you have Joe Tooney, you don't have to draft Cole Strange in 2022.
No.
You can take a tackle or Trent McDuffie. You know, it's all counterfactual history.
Yeah,
I know,
100%.
But it goes to that point. We got a texter here from 207. Thanks for texting. When Brady came off the bench as a sixth rounder, what did we have? Stop making excuses.
They had a Super Bowl caliber defense. Terry Glenn, David Patton.
Troy Brown had 101 catches that year. Antoine Smith ran for 1,000 yards. You had a top 10 defense. And Shine disagrees with me on this, and he still knows that. Back.
I think we can all agree this situation is entirely different. Entirely different than the Tom Brady situation.
Even than the Mac Jones situation.
Yes. You don't have an established head coach in the NFL. This is Gerard Mayo's first year. You don't have an established offensive coordinator like Charlie Weiss or Josh McDaniels.
Agreed.
Even.
Completely.
You don't have the talent that either of those teams had. It is so far and away different than anything the Patriots have dealt with in the last 40 years.
Yeah, real. I mean, I think they haven't had this little talent maybe since
93?
I was going to say 2000, but yeah, maybe 92, 93.
Like at least in 2000, you had Drew Bledsoe. He got a $100 million contract for a reason, but prior to Drew Bledsoe, okay, 30 years. You have never seen a dearth. Is it dearth? Is that the right word? Dearth of talent like this in 30 years in New England.
And speaking of talent that is not here anymore, we just spent a whole segment. Still have not talked about Matt Judon yet.
Man.
That's okay.
Sorry, Matt. At this point, when you're not here, you're kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Literally, yes. But we are going to talk about the Matt Judon trade coming up next, right after this break.
How do I say goodbye to
These decisions are never easy for us with Matthew, who's a core guy and one of our better players. You know, I think Matthew is probably the one that said it best. There's football and then there's the business of football. And sometimes it's difficult to adjust to each thing. But we wish him the best. He was a good player for us. And I know he's going to do good things in Atlanta. And we have some guys that are capable of, you know, filling the mantle for him.
Back here on WEEI. I'm John Lyons, alongside Chris Schott. Joe Braverman is playing some tunes. Hi, Joe.
Howdy.
We need some more juice next time. I don't think it's hard to say goodbye to him.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that.
I'm going to miss the red sleeves at least.
Are you? I'm not.
I am going to miss.
He made someone stand out from a group of nobodies.
I don't think it's a group of nobodies. Like with Judon leading into this season, I felt like they could have had one of the best front sevens almost in all of football. And that was also assuming Christian Barmore was healthy prior to his blood clots. Now without Judon, I still think they're really talented.
Yeah, like before Judon and Barmore got hurt, I thought they were going to have a top three or four defense in the NFL. Top three defense in the NFL overall, yeah. Statistically. With those
two
guys,
recognizable. I was talking recognizable names.
Fair, but like I think by the end of the season, Keon White might just be a recognizable name.
Even if he never smiles.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of plays into it. Yeah. Like, he is, man, that guy is stone cold.
He really is. But I thought they're going to be a top three defense with Barmore and Judon. And assuming Gonzalez, you know, is back fully healthy and progressing and all that. But without those two guys, I'm like, okay, they could still be like 10th. Like, 11th.
Oh, yeah, they're.
Like,
they're,
that's the thing.
So, even without Judon, they're still a top half of the league defense. I don't think that's a question. And I mean, if Dietrich Wise wants to play like he did on Thursday night in every game during the regular season, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, like this is a team that was 7th in yards per game last year, and they were 15th in points per game, but here's the caveat, and this is not fantasy football, folks.
No.
It's real football. Their offense, you want to take a guess at how many points their offense gave up off direct, like pick sixes, fumbles, all that?
Oh, I bet it's probably top three in the league.
38 points. Just off a safety, pick sixes, fumble recoveries.
Well, even on top of that, too, how many short fields this defense was dealing with because of turnovers and just three and outs.
And I love that you brought that up because I go to the Buffalo game last year. First of all, the offense turns it over four times in the first 20 minutes. You only lose that game 27-21. The defense's very first series, I don't know if you recall this, Shime, they forced a three and out.
Yeah.
And the Bills got a field goal because the Patriots turned it over in field goal.
Correct.
So, like, and that's why. Too, like, I know our good friend Andy Hart says zero wins is in play and all this and that. And, like,
I just think this defense is too good for them.
Well, and my thing is I agree, but I think, like, can they get to five or six wins? Probably five in my mind, but it's because the defense is probably going to be a top nine or ten, top 10 unit. And offensively, no matter who's playing quarterback, it is not going to be as bad as last year.
No.
Their quarterback play was literally the worst in the NFL last year.
Correct.
Like, and you can.
It was worse than Zach Wilson, which is saying something.
Like, even, like, if you're a numbers guy, like, PFF has their advanced stats, they rate all the QBs. Bailey Zappi and Mac Jones last year tied for 63rd.
Yeah, they were not.
There's 32 teams in the league, Shime, and they tied for 63rd. Or, if you just watch the games, I mean,
they weren't good. Neither of them were good.
They were awful.
We were clamoring for Zappi just because it was still equally as bad as Mac Jones. There just wasn't the attitude issues to go along with it, yeah. And like the sour face on the field to go with it. And but they were both horrible.
Yeah. And as far as this Judon situation goes, so you don't have him anymore, but you also only had him for four games last year.
Yep.
So
and this defense was still elite.
Yeah. You had a great defense without Matthew Judon for most of last year. You get a third-round pick back, which I have to say, credit to Wolf, that's better value than I thought.
I entirely agree. Yeah. I thought you were going to end up with like a fourth, and you also had to give up like a sixth, but I thought this is awesome.
I thought it was going to be like conditional fifth that can become a fourth.
A clean third-round pick, you take that all day every day.
Yeah, I agree. But I think this whole thing is kind of a rookie mistake slash learning experience for Mayo and Wolf. And the reason I say that is I don't look at this as a July or August debacle that ends in a trade. I look at it as a February and March mistake. And why I say that, Shime, is they came into the offseason knowing we're going to offer on Onwenu big money and Duggar and Peppers
and Barmore
and Stevenson and Barmore and probably eventually pay Godshaw. They knew in March we're going to pay all these guys, or at least attempt to pay all these guys.
They should have addressed this with Judon then.
It felt like they never foresaw,
absolutely,
oh,
right,
this might piss off Judon. And I understand their logic of, well, he's going to be 32 and he's coming off an injury. Fine, but what you should have done is one of three things to me, Sean. Either just paid him, traded him, or gone to him and said, hey, you're coming off an injury. Give us 1 month of fully healthy play through training camp and we'll pay you at the beginning of September. It felt none of those things happened. So then we end up in July where he's having a temper tantrum with Mayo on the field and you have all this media circus. And again, they got good value in the third round pick. But I think this is a whole thing because this is a huge part of Belichick being gone and Mayo and Wolf taking over. There's going to be growing pains. Does something like this happen in 2 years with Keon White and Christian Gonzalez? Are they ahead of it? Do they have good decisions?
So they were ahead of it with Barmore. I give them credit.
Exactly.
And so, like, to me, I don't think something like this is a repeatable thing. I think this is a first-time GM made a mistake
rookie
issue
mistake
out of Elliott Wolf. But ultimately, he gets great value out of it, and everything's going to be fine. I think the last month or so has been a bit of a... It just kind of...
It's been a big distraction.
I don't want to say debacle because I feel like that is far too strong. It has been a distraction. You're right. That's kind of right, probably the right direction. I think Wolf learns from this, though. I don't think something like this happens again, at least anytime soon. And I think what if Keon White is as good as I think he will be, I think you'll see Wolf jump on that early, kind of like what he did with Barmore. And I think you'll see him jump on Gonzalez early if Gonzalez pans out. And so I don't really have concerns, I think, long-term with this. I think this was just kind of a bump in the road, and it's a learning experience for Elliott Wolf. And I felt like Jerod Mayo was getting far too much criticism for an issue that was the front office's responsibility.
Yeah, and that's also the other piece of this, because like I agree with you. I think it's a learning experience, rookie mistake. I don't necessarily think this is going to happen again, at least this publicly.
Yeah.
But this is the type of thing that can cause an issue between Mayo and Wolf, because Wolf, again, doesn't pay the guy, doesn't have that conversation of give me a healthy month, and then it's Mayo has to deal with it on the practice field.
Yeah, and he's the one that's getting yelled at by Judon instead of when in reality, when even Judon is talking to the fans, yeah, tell Elliott Wolf to pay me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Talk to Elliott. To Elliott. You know, Elliott texted me and said, why don't you go back on the field? Blah, 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 all this stuff. So I think it should be a learning experience. I think the question is, are they actually going to learn from it? Because like that on-field little temper tantrum back and forth, I think you can agree, never happens under Bill Belichick. Ever.
No.
And I think, again, part of it is maybe they're ahead of it. Because there were plenty of guys, you know this growing up here, from here, that were pissed about their contracts under Belichick. Guys he traded away. But it felt like on-the-field situation, and I mean, I know Richard Seymour held out, you know, 20 years ago. Other guys, you know, Stephon Gilmore.
Logan Mankins held out.
Yes, and that got acrimonious.
Yep.
But there was never a just scene on the practice field with Bill yelling back and forth.
Well, I think also, too, at the time, there was never really these hold-ins.
Well, Gilmore did happen a lot more now. That wasn't an issue. So
sure.
So, again, I think it's a learning experience. And I think for the front office, what they've kind of told us this whole off-season to me is we think Belichick and Mac Jones ruined this. We're going to pay a bunch of guys, draft and develop, we'll be good in 2 years. I think that's been kind of the message.
Yeah.
You know, without saying it outwardly, that's been the message across the board. You look at that. You know, they let Bill and Mac go, and most of the other guys, at least key contributors, are the same. The head coach is an underling promoted.
Because you look at this roster right now, if you added a legitimate left tackle to this team, they're, like, pretty good. Are they amazing? No. But with a rookie quarterback, you could expect 6 to 7 wins.
Defensively, they're good enough to make the playoffs.
Absolutely. And I think offensively, all you're missing is a legitimate left tackle and a legitimate number one receiver.
And I would say,
and those aren't like easy commodities to come by, but the receiver has been far easier to come by as of late than the tackle.
And I'd also say, and this is no one's fault yet, but good quarterback play, which they haven't had in a couple of years.
Sure,
and
but
we could get that. I think that guy's there in May.
Yeah, exactly.
We just got to see it.
Yeah,
but I think
we assume that May will develop into that, and that's why I'm saying, like, if you had had a Lyle Collins at left tackle and actually, I don't even know that you need the number one receiver right this second, but if you had a legit left tackle, whether it's, you know, an Orlando Brown or a Lyle Collins or some guy or a Laremy Tunsil, a guy in that vein on your roster right now, it is in the realm of possibility that you are this year's Houston Texans.
Yeah, and I think special teams, not that we're going to dive too deep into that, but that's been awful for 2-3 years now.
That's going to be better.
I mean, can it get any worse? Except their special teams coach did coach for the Rams, who was one of the few units worse than them.
Sure, but like the person, but when you look at the personnel on special teams right now, it's good. Yeah. Like you have multiple options to
be
punt returner, kick returner,
kicker job.
Yeah, I mean that guy has a boot. He's good though. Like he's been on multiple teams in the NFL, but Joey Sly has been a good kicker in the NFL for a couple of years.
Yeah, let's take a quick call before break. We have Paulie and Dedham on the left tackle situation. Paulie, what do you got for us?
Okay, boys.
Paulie, we're going to have to let you go there. Thanks for the call.
Your phone
was
awful, brother.
Yeah, I heard something about a number one option, but
I couldn't hear anything.
You get to a better spot, Paulie, feel free to call us back.
We know what his call was going to be.
What, bring Brady back?
Yeah,
he did say that to
me.
We got to protect Drake May because we don't have a left tackle. So who do you throw out there? Tom Brady.
All right.
Yeah.
Good call, Paulie. Thank you, Paulie.
Appreciate that. Thank you. We will be right back. Excited for the 2 o'clock hour. We have a special guest joining us at 2:20, but we'll be back in just a few minutes.
How do I say goodbye to a
These decisions are never easy for us with Matthew, who's a core guy and one of our better players. You know, I think Matthew is probably the one that said it best. There's football and then there's the business of football, and sometimes it's difficult to adjust to each thing. But we wish him the best. He was a good player for us, and I know he's going to do good things in Atlanta, and we have some guys that are capable of, you know, filling the mantle for him. To thee
forever. Back here on WEEI. I'm John Lyons, alongside Chris Schott. Joe Braverman is playing some tunes. Hi, Joe.
Howdy.
We need some more juice next time. I don't think it's hard to say goodbye to him. Yeah. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that.
I'm going to miss the red sleeves, at least.
Are you? I'm not.
I am going to miss.
He made someone stand out from a group of nobodies.
I don't think it's a group of nobodies. Like, with Judon leading into this season, I felt like they could have had one of the best front sevens almost in all of football. And that was also assuming Christian Barmore was healthy prior to his blood clots. Now, without Judon, I still think they're really talented.
Yeah, like, before Judon and Barmore got hurt, I thought they were going to have a top three or four defense in the NFL. Top three defense in the NFL overall, yeah. Statistically. With those
two
guys,
recognizable. I was talking recognizable names.
Fair, but like, I think by the end of the season, Keon White might just be a recognizable name,
even if he never smiles.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of plays into it. Yeah. Like, he is, man, that guy is stone cold.
He really is. But I thought they're going to be a top three defense with Barmore and Judon, and assuming Gonzalez, you know, is back fully healthy and progressing and all that. But without those two guys, I'm like, okay, they could still be like 10th. Like,
oh, yeah, they're
like,
they're,
that's the thing. So,
even without Judon, they're still a top half of the league defense. I don't think that's a question. And I mean, if Dietrich Wise wants to play like he did on Thursday night in every game during the regular season, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, like, this is a team that was 7th in yards per game last year, and they were 15th in points per game. But here's the caveat, and this is not fantasy football, folks.
No.
It's real football. Their offense, you want to take a guess at how many points their offense gave up off direct, like pick sixes, fumbles, all that?
Oh, I bet it's probably top three in the league.
38 points. Just off a safety, pick sixes, fumble recoveries.
Well, even on top of that, too, how many short fields this defense was dealing with because of turnovers and just three and outs.
And I love that you brought that up, because I go to the Buffalo game last year. First of all, the offense turns it over four times in the first 20 minutes. You only lose that game 27-21. The defense's very first series, I don't know if you recall this, Sean, they forced a three and out.
Yeah.
And the Bills got a field goal because the Patriots turned it over in field goal.
Correct.
So, like, and that's why, too, like, I know our good friend Andy Hart says zero wins is in play and all this and that. And, like,
I just think this defense is too good for
that. Well, and my thing is I agree, but I think, like, can they get to five or six wins? Probably five in my mind, but it's because the defense is probably going to be a top nine or ten, top 10 unit. And offensively, no matter who's playing quarterback, it is not going to be as bad as last year.
No.
Their quarterback play was literally the worst in the NFL last year.
Correct.
Like, and you can,
it was worse than Zach Wilson, which is saying something.
Like, even, like, if you're a numbers guy, like, PFF has their advanced stats, they rate all the QBs. Bailey Zappi and Mac Jones last year tied for 63rd.
Yeah, they were not.
There's 32 teams in the league, Shime, and they tied for 63rd. Or, if you just watch the games, I mean,
they weren't good. Neither of them were good.
They were awful.
We were clamoring for Zappi just because it was still equally as bad as Mac Jones. There just wasn't the attitude issues to go along with it, yeah. And like the sour face on the field to go with it. But they were both horrible.
Yeah. And as far as this Judon situation goes, so you don't have him anymore, but you also only had him for four games last year.
Yep.
So,
and this defense was still elite.
Yeah. You had a great defense without Matthew Judon for most of last year. You get a third-round pick back, which I have to say, credit to Wolf. That's better value than I thought.
I entirely agree. Yeah. I thought you were going to end up with like a fourth, and you also had to give up like a sixth, but I thought this was awesome.
I thought it was going to be like conditional fifth that can become a fourth.
A clean third-round pick, you take that all day every day.
Yeah, I agree. But I think this whole thing is kind of a rookie mistake / learning experience for Mayo and Wolf. And the reason I say that is I don't look at this as a July or August debacle that ends in a trade. I look at it as a February and March mistake. And why I say that, Shime, is they came into the offseason knowing we're going to offer on Wenu big money and Duggar and Peppers
and Barmore
and Stevenson and Barmore and probably eventually pay Godshaw. They knew in March we're going to pay all these guys, or at least attempt to pay all these guys.
They should have addressed this with Judon then.
It felt like they never foresaw,
absolutely,
oh,
right,
this might piss off Judon. And I understand their logic of, well, he's going to be 32 and he's coming off an injury. Fine, but what you should have done is one of three things to me, Sean. Either just paid him, traded him,
or gone to him and said, hey, you're coming off an injury. Give us 1 month of fully healthy play through training camp, and we'll pay you at the beginning of September. It felt none of those things happened. So then we end up in July where he's having a temper tantrum with Mayo on the field, and you have all this media circus. And again, they got good value in the third-round pick. But I think this is a whole thing because this is a huge part of Belichick being gone and Mayo and Wolf taking over. There's going to be growing pains. Does something like this happen in 2 years with Keon White and Christian Gonzalez? Are they ahead of it? Do they have good decisions?
So they were ahead of it with Barmore. I give them credit.
Exactly.
And so, like, to me, I don't think something like this is a repeatable thing. I think this is a first-time GM made a mistake
rookie
issue
mistake
out of Elliott Wolf. But ultimately, he gets great value out of it, and everything's going to be fine. I think the last month or so has been a bit of a...
It's been a big distraction.
I don't want to say debacle because I feel like that is far too strong. It has been a distraction. You're right. That's kind of probably the right direction. I think Wolf learns from this, though. I don't think something like this happens again, at least anytime soon. And I think what if Keon White is as good as I think he will be, I think you'll see Wolf jump on that early, kind of like what he did with Barmore. And I think you'll see him jump on Gonzalez early if Gonzalez pans out. And so I don't really have concerns, I think, long-term with this. I think this was just kind of a bump in the road, and it's a learning experience for Elliott Wolf. And I felt like Jerod Mayo was getting far too much criticism for an issue that was the front office's responsibility.
Yeah, and that's also the other piece of this, because like I agree with you. I think it's a learning experience, rookie mistake. I don't necessarily think this is going to happen again, at least this publicly.
Yeah.
But this is the type of thing that can cause an issue between Mayo and Wolf, because Wolf, again, doesn't pay the guy, doesn't have that conversation of give me a healthy month. And then it's Mayo has to deal with it on the practice field.
Yeah, and he's the one that's getting yelled at by Judon instead of when in reality, when even Judon is talking to the fans, yeah, tell Elliott Wolf to pay me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Talk to Elliott. To Elliott. You know, Elliott texted me and said, why don't you go back on the field? Blah, 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 all this stuff. So I think it should be a learning experience. I think the question is, are they actually going to learn from it? Because like that on-field little temper tantrum back and forth, I think you can agree, never happens under Bill Belichick. Ever.
No.
And I think, again, part of it is maybe they're ahead of it. Because there were plenty of guys, you know this growing up here, from here, that were pissed about their contracts under Belichick. Guys he traded away. But it felt like on the field situation, and I mean, I know Richard Seymour held out, you know, 20 years ago. Other guys, you know, Stephon Gilmore.
Logan Mankins held out.
Yes, and that got acrimonious.
Yep.
But there was never a just scene on the practice field with Bill yelling back and forth.
I think also, too, at the time, there was never really these hold-ins.
Gilmore
that
did
happen
it,
a lot
and that wasn't
now.
An issue.
So
again, I think it's a learning experience. And I think for the front office, what they've kind of told us this whole off-season to me is we think Belichick and Mac Jones ruin this. We're going to pay a bunch of guys, draft and develop, we'll be good in 2 years. I think that's been kind of the message.
Yeah.
You know, without saying it outwardly, that's been the message across the board. You look at that. You know, they let Bill and Mac go, and most of the other guys, at least key contributors, are the same. The head coach is an underling promoted.
Because you look at this roster right now, if you added a legitimate left tackle to this team, they're, like, pretty good. Are they amazing? No. But with a rookie quarterback, you could expect 6 to 7 wins.
Defensively, they're
easily.
Good enough to make the playoffs.
Absolutely. And I think offensively, all you're missing is a legitimate left tackle and a legitimate number one receiver.
And I would say...
And those aren't like easy commodities to come by, but the receiver has been far easier to come by as of late than the tackle.
And what I'd also say, and this is no one's fault yet, but good quarterback play, which they haven't had in a couple of years.
Sure,
and
but...
we could get there. I think that guy's there in May.
Yeah, exactly.
We just got to see it.
Yeah,
but I think
we assume that May will develop into that, and that's why I'm saying, like, if you had a Lyle Collins at left tackle and... Actually, I don't even know that you need the number one receiver right this second, but if you had a legit left tackle, whether it's, you know, an Orlando Brown or a Lyle Collins or some guy or a Laremy Tunsil, a guy in that vein on your roster right now, it is in the realm of possibility that you are this year's Houston Texans.
Yeah, and I think special teams, not that we're going to dive too deep into that, but that's been awful for 2-3 years
now. That's going to be better.
I mean, can it get any worse? Except their special teams coach did coach for the Rams, who was one of the few units worse than them.
Sure, but like but when you look at the personnel on special teams right now, it's good. Yeah. Like you have multiple options to
Joey
be punt
Sly's
returner, kick returner,
won the kicker job.
Yeah, I mean
that guy
has a boot. He's good though. Like he's been on multiple teams in the NFL, but Joey Sly has been a good kicker in the NFL for a couple of years.
Yeah. Let's take a quick call before break. We have Paulie and Dedham on the left tackle situation. Paulie, what do you got for us?
Okay, boys. I think Jack Bradbury firing away is your number one guy right now, but you don't want to put him in and take the chance.
Paulie, we're going to have to let you go there. Thanks for the call.
Your phone
was
awful, brother.
Yeah, I heard something about a number one option, but...
Yeah, I couldn't hear anything.
You get to a better spot, Paulie, feel free to call us back.
We know what his call was going to be.
What, bring Brady back?
Yeah,
he did say that to
me.
He
does that.
We got to protect Drake May because we don't have a left tackle. So who do you throw out there? Tom Brady.
All right.
Yeah.
Good call, Paulie. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Paulie.
Appreciate that. Thank you. We will be right back. Excited for the 2 o'clock hour. We have a special guest joining us at 2:20, but we'll be back in just a few minutes.
From the mind of a 2 foot tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.